말해. 아다 그 상황들 개와 디과세대 돕치슈 아니 어데 디고마 슈바레 지나다 디 돕치슈 요하야 될이야 아니 시군에 아니 지키게 지키 돕치슈 요레스 디니군에 돕치슈 요레스 냉무벽군에 돕치슈 요레스 아니지 어두시는 가서 가서 디나니다 신규권에 돕치슈 개와사야 단 디버사이게 유 아니 신기를 때네 사야 되래 아니 또 견디 받쳐줘야 되네 요래 해서 이제 나 돈다니 보다만 돼나나 라마다 아니 지게 라마다 드라이브기 윤대대 된바다 아니 랑게 파마로 소바다 군주 숨다 전주 셈바 안디 솔라 미지 최고 부와 있나 당에 만주기 직계와지 휴 침부셔야 사고래스 디바로 시위네 디바 채용 거래스 모두 시네 주요된 아바도 제니스 말이야 땡비게다 직나 저게 세는 개와 천주지 주베네야 아니 아 개와 빼면서 또 침바사고 그래 대인자당을 가서 대니시네네 야 인티바사반 디바 침바사고 가서 대리야 아니 도시네 하고 왜 터냐 어느 쪽이다 기회 잼 야와 냠을 주야 돼 기침을 해서 가서 뒤쉬러 가다
Good morning. And last night, we continued to look at the presentation on differentiating between height, heavy and light karma. And we came to the second part, presentation of what makes a karmic action particularly powerful. And this is presented by way of 4 points. And of these 4 points are, firstly, that of the field, which is the recipient of the activity, so to whom towards the virtuous or non-virtuous act is directed. And then what we'll still come to is that of the support, so that's the basis of the vows of the person engaging the activity. The third will be the thing or the substance that is offered, and the fourth is the attitude or motivation. So we looked at the first of those four last night, the field or recipient. And there it was presented as being the three jewels, lamas, those similar to lamas, so teachers of other people, and bodhisattvas, and one's parents. And what was presented is that even a ordinary act towards them, towards such a field, such a recipient, will produce great consequences, great karmic results. So there, and this is in the context of both virtuous and non-virtuous activities. So this presentation is important to know because in dependence on these four characteristics of which the first is the field, one's regular karmic activities can produce a greatly enhanced result.
디바사가나 개와 주켄데 니톤에 띵이 챤에다 디바디 치중요레 개와이네 치중요레에서 디골마 어두 개와디 마시야레
So we'll start now at the bottom of page 132, which is the second of these four aspects, great strength by way of the support. And support here refers to the person who is engaging in the virtuous activity or the non-virtuous activity.
啊，那恁嘛，啊，这的来泥巴呢？泥巴是泥巴呢？啊，那家具公布穿洋，电镀金拉斯，嗯，电影内镀漆皮器器洋，电镀，啊，那电镀翘瓦新镀，米开巴当，那米开巴当，开背这边地瓜洋，嗯，几瓦当，洋瓦松松。
So reading from the text, and I've just added a few words of no real significance. Just as even a tiny lump of iron sinks to the bottom, whereas a container made from it floats on top, so likewise the bad actions committed by unskillful people and skillful people are respectively heavy and light.
Mm. 家己公布穿洋，定都进来；是家如新呢，穷穷如新，多多如穷穷钱呢。那么路上穿那下边，那么穿马金如果的是。你看家己钱包里现在把来不来不说，女儿如今来不来不说下边呢。
The illustration given is, imagine just a small lump of metal. It will just sink to the bottom of water. It doesn't need to be particularly large, but it will immediately sink to the bottom of a pool of water. But if that same lump of metal is fashioned into a different shape, perhaps curved and hollow, it will float on the surface of the water. It will not sink. So the meaning then is those who have been fashioned their mind in a way so that they are skilled or knowledgeable, they can make a great virtue, accumulate great virtue with ease, and non-virtue that they still accumulate is likely to be minor. But those who have not fashioned their mind in a particular way, and therefore are unskillful in their activities, lacking knowledge, they will struggle to accumulate great virtuous deeds and are much more likely to accumulate powerful non-virtue. So the words translated as unskillful or skillful can also be translated as knowledgeable or lacking knowledge, or scholar or non-scholar. And so these are terms that can be applied in a limitless number of contexts. But here, it refers specifically to the context of knowing the Dharma and thereby being able to accumulate virtue, or not knowing the Dharma and thereby accumulating immense non-virtue.
Diba misangwar, di nyembo gewa chibige, keba la yangwar sungjis. Zedanda keba la yangwa yimi kimsengarasana keba digi, gewi gejo nyamlin chikhen shingan digi, diba sabi inaya lamsa, ane o diba liya ngama cheba dili, ngyoha kiya da, ane chima da maungwa na zikimi esimi domsim kiya, tangazi diba shaya tsuburwa dinek domsim kiya jaya. Ane diba misangwa sayadi, sushuge nyeba chima la diba di pa bie ma bie ba chaya, Tan Yāngvār
Now, Lama Tsongkhapa presents a reasoning to explain or to back up what has just been presented. It is said that for those who are skillful, who regret their previous bad actions, restrain themselves in the future, do not keep them secret, and apply their virtuous antidotes, they are light. So here a reason is presented as to why, with the analogy, a lump of metal, if it's fashioned in a particular way, it will float to the top. So this is where we see that those who are skillful or knowledgeable in the Dharma, but also skillful in terms of their mind, on those occasions when they do accumulate non-virtue, they will recognize this as non-virtue. One, they'll be aware enough of their own mind and behavior, and they will also have the understanding of what is virtuous and non-virtuous, and immediately regret will come. They won't not observe their non-virtue. They also won't excuse their non-virtue. Immediately, regret will come. And not only will regret come, but they will then commit to not doing so again because they know that this is harmful to themselves and through them, harmful to others. And therefore, they will not conceal it, but will rather confess it, or as it's here, not keep it secret, but will confess their non-virtue and will accumulate virtue to purify. So in this way, the skillful practitioner will accrue far less non-virtue, and when they do, it will be light in strength because they will immediately purify it. Whereas those who are unskillful, they will act in completely the opposite way. When they engage in non-virtue, they most probably will not even be aware of it. Or if they do, they're not likely to generate regret, much more likely to excuse their behavior, justify their behavior. And therefore, the wish to refrain from such non-virtuous behavior, not very likely to arise. And therefore, the wish to purify that non-virtue is not going to arise. So what we see here is that someone who's unskillful will accumulate so much more non-virtue because they won't even be aware of it, or if they are, they won't recognize it as being non-virtuous and therefore will have no wish to purify or restrain themselves. So therefore, those who are unskillful will with ease accumulate extensive non-virtue. Lama Tsongkhapa concludes with, whereas for those who arrogantly assume they are skillful and do not do this, but out of contempt deliberately engage in them, they are heavy.
Yes,
Whereas for those, so this refers to those who are engaging in non-virtue, who arrogantly assume they are skillful. So these are people, so this word translated as skillful, it's a good translation. It can also be translated as knowledge, knowledgeable. So take both the meanings throughout this paragraph. So those who consider themselves knowledgeable in the Dharma, skillful in the Dharma, when they engage in non-virtue, because of an inflated sense of pride, thinking, I'm learned, I've done all this practice, they then look at the non-virtue they've engaged and dismiss it, saying, ah, it doesn't matter, it's insignificant. So in this way, out of contempt, they ignore the non-virtue that they accumulate, and therefore they accumulate significant non-virtue.
The meaning
here is that we need to develop an awareness of our own behavior, in particular the direction our mind is in, so that we can recognize when we do engage in non-virtue. And then with the recognition of non-virtue having been accumulated, independence on the teachings one has received, immediately then, recognizing as non-virtue, generate regret. Recognizing this was non-virtuous, it caused harm to myself and possibly to others. And from this regret, a mind of restraint, I will not do this again. Then one confesses to the basis of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, apologizes to them with sincerity, imagining oneself in their presence, and then intentionally accumulates virtue so as to purify that non-virtue. So in this way, one applies the opponent powers readily without needing to have it done as a formal session, but watches one's mind and responds appropriately. And in this way, the non-virtue that, as ordinary beings, we will accumulate is weakened significantly. And not only is the non-virtue that we accumulate weakened, but by sincerely engaging the four opponent powers in this way, we create a block within ourselves, an obstruction within ourselves to engaging a new non-virtue. So in this way, we both purify past non-virtue, and we serve to limit the accumulation of new non-virtue. So this is what we should take from this presentation.
That is KBGB, Kewa Dian, Kewa Chewa,
What I hope I've managed to emphasize throughout the presentation thus far is that this presentation refers to both virtuous and non-virtuous behavior. So it's a way that to avoid accruing great non-virtue, but also a way to accrue great virtue. So those who are skillful and unskillful can engage in the same activity, but can accrue a very different result in terms of the magnitude of virtue accumulated. To give an example, someone who's not skillful or knowledgeable in the Dharma, when they engage in a virtuous act, let's say they're giving food to animals, they will just do so and be done, and they'll go on about their day. Nothing much going on with inside of themselves, and therefore, whilst virtue is accumulated, it will be minor. But someone who is skillful in the Dharma, doing that same act, they will generate a motivation beforehand. In particular, they will try to generate as best they can a motivation of bodhicitta, of wanting, by helping this being in this minor way, to be able to help all beings in the most important of ways. And with a motivation of bodhicitta, they will then engage in the act, and they'll do so with a mind of delight, of enjoying helping others, helping to alleviate the suffering of others. And even so, whilst they're engaging in it, it will be a mind similar to rejoicing, and they will have rejoiced in it when they have made the generous deed. So this will serve to amplify the virtue being accumulated, and thereafter, the third part, is they will dedicate the virtue. So a person who's skillful will, unlike a person who's unskillful, will generate a motivation, a specific motivation before engaging in the act. They'll engage in the act with a mind of delight and rejoice in the act, and they will dedicate those three components. So what I want you to take from this then is that be aware of your mind, and when you are about to engage in an activity, ensure you're doing so with a virtuous motivation, and the motivation should be one, ideally, one of bodhicitta. that one is, I'm about to engage in this activity, whatever it may be. Let's say it's this act of generosity, whatever it may be. By doing so, may I alleviate the suffering of others. And may I alleviate not only directly the suffering of this being, but may I alleviate the suffering of all beings. And not just their temporary suffering, but may I alleviate the suffering of them being born in samsara. May I lead them all to gain freedom from suffering. And to do this, through this generous act, may I quickly become a Buddha for the sake of others. And then one engages in a generous act, or the virtuous act. And one does so now with this motivation of bodhicitta. And rejoice, to have a mind of delight in whilst doing so, which will come naturally with such a motivation. And then afterwards, dedicate the virtue, dedicate it to the accomplishments of that motivation. And then continue to rejoice, take delight in what you've done. Because this rejoicing serves to both amplify the merit accumulated and make it so much more likely that you'll look out for such opportunities to be of benefit again.
Samla Ningbo Rep Sam Yis Marme Sanji Yi Chuten La Chuba Chuba We Then Jansim Kimne Chungwa Chungwa Ne Marme Ningbo Juzan Jumaridi Guiba Chuten Yu Chudu Nzimba Sunam Ki Gi Chaya Mifover Song Des.
That concludes the first part of this A Great Strength by Way of the Support, where we looked at the difference between the skillful and the unskillful. Now we come to the second sub-outline, which is presenting quotations from Sutra to establish the strength of the support. So reading from the text, the Heap of Jewels Sutra also declares that if all the sentient beings of the billion universes were to have entered the Mahayana and gained the endowments of universal monarchs, and if each of them were to offer butter lamps in vessels the size of an ocean, and with sticks and with wicks the size of Mount Meru to a stupa of a Buddha, this would not match even 100th part of the merit of a bodhisattva who has left his home and who holds up a little bit of wick smeared with butter in front of a stupa.
Mm-hmm. 但对那个说的是呢，东宋也心间他们就贴心来修的，是不是？但东宋也心间他们就写的，那个就给东晋的东夷东宋写的那个，他心间报都没吧，写出来的那个心间他们就贴心来修的，是贴把钦笔给讲究心俱来借，贴把钦笔来俱来借借呢。但对呢，钦笔钦笔的钦笔讲究什么？是我的钦笔的那个钦笔讲究什么？对那个报都没吧，东宋也。 你提出去呢，贴近讲究什么？贴近南区来去。但呢，安呢，地区给确保科罗局局界限的点吧。但可能是了，嗯，龙穴了嘛说呢，科罗什么界限的点吧，越往南行去。地区给他，个，米热热讲啊，俺马尔密个女的白，加钱不结束南行，钱不结，对了呀，那最终嘛说呢，日不南行，钱不做些马尔密。
对，安尼生意也确定了，不然呢？但虽然报都没把三月罗的，就算第二个情绪先把热热给，先把情绪什么热热给，俺第二个东宋也情绪先把贴贴把什么就情绪先把这个，但东宋那就涨个蛮好小小的吧。之所以热热给他，第二个全部不要的，全部加起上马上呢，加上哪些钱不钱？但呢，确定都要的把日热那些钱不，得了不做的，买卖不完的，但买卖的把钱不接拿。
So again, the Buddha presented comparison. So we'll look at the first half of the comparison. So the sutra declares that if all the sentient beings of the billion universes, so what's been translated as billion universes, you'll have come across elsewhere and more literally as the 3,000 world systems, but the meaning is exactly this. So it's to show just how many sentient beings. So if all of them were to have entered the Mahayana, so in other words, they have generated bodhicitta within their mind. So they are bodhisattvas. They've generated uncontrived bodhicitta. But you'll see from comparison, they are not ordained. And it continues, and have gained the endowments of universal monarchs. So this refers to have attained inconceivable wealth and power, incredible material resources as well as power and influence. And with such power, influence, and material resources, if each of them were to offer butter lamps in vessels the size of an ocean and with wicks the size of Mount Meru to a stupa of a Buddha, so this illustration of an offering is inconceivable for people like ourselves, but this is possible for beings with such inconceivable material wealth and resources. The comparison continues. This would not even match. So this would not even match. So here we bear in mind what an incredibly virtuous activity has just been undertaken. This incredible number of beings, not just beings, bodhisattvas, making the most inconceivable of offerings. No one would doubt that each of them has created an incredible amount of merit, let alone them all combined. So now the comparison comes. This would not even match 1/100th part of the merit of a bodhisattva who has left his home. So this then, the comparison here is, this practitioner, now in the second part, is also a bodhisattva, like those others, but they have ordained. So having gone forth into the homeless life, having ordained. Mm-hmm. And who holds up a little bit of a wick, smeared with butter, in front of a stupa. So we see how vastly different the offering is that this ordained bodhisattva makes, but the merit accumulated is many multiples greater. The non-ordained bodhisattvas only accumulate a small fraction of the merit compared to the ordained bodhisattva.
Dini sa samba dang xin la kebra me jing, ngobo la kebra xindu che yang, dingi tupsu an sa lu osu.
So the difference in this comparison is that in the second part, the ordained bodhisattva has the support of vows on their continuum, vows of ordination on their continuum. And that makes the power of the act, that support, because this is the meaning of great strength by way of the support of vows, makes that act so much more powerful. Then the text continues. This makes clear the strength of the support, even if there is no difference in the attitude and the field, and even if the thing offered is very different. So this makes clear the strength of the support. So support here refers to vows, and even if there's no difference in the attitude, so because in the comparison, both groups were bodhisattvas, so they had bodhicitta on their continuum. And the field, as we saw in the previous point, that is the recipient. And yeah, it's the same. So there's no difference there in terms of either attitude or field. And even if the thing offered is very different. So the thing offered, what is being offered? Here in this illustration, in this comparison, we see there is a great difference. What is being offered by the bodhisattvas who do not have vows of ordination is immense. It's, for us, it really is quite inconceivable to offer batter lamps in the vessels of the size of an ocean and with wicks the size of Mount Meru. This is an inconceivable offering, especially when compared to what the ordained bodhisattva offered, which is a wick smeared with butter in front of a stupa. So a very ordinary offering compared to one quite extraordinary.
We see here
the motivation or attitude, there is no difference. The recipient, there is or feel, there is no difference. The object offered, vastly different. And then the text concludes, this makes clear the strength of the support. So in other words, where the difference really comes that leads to the great merit being accumulated is the support. In other words, the vows on the continuum of the person making the offering.
Kim rabju digi na lunga yisum ge tone shen ye ne ba che cha san
Both groups here, of the ordained and non-ordained bodhisattvas, they have the same motivation of wanting to alleviate all beings of suffering, take all beings to full and complete enlightenment, and therefore are striving to become Buddhas themselves. So there's no difference in terms of the motivation or to whom the offering is made. But the difference comes is that the ordained bodhisattva has taken the vows that serve to restrain their physical, verbal, and mental behavior from bringing any harm. And it's that addition of the support that leads to so much more merit from the same act being accumulated.
Rigbe, Domba Yume Dang, Domba Yume Dang, Yuba Layang, Chiden Da, Niden Da, Sumden Ye, Din Ye, Lam Gomba Yang, Namangama, Namle, Chima Chima, Che Chodu, Sachu Chever of Songshings.
Lamatokapa continues. This reasoning also makes clear that depending on whether one has the support of vows, and if so, whether it is one, two, or three sets of vows, the cultivation of the path will be the more effective the more one has.
So the
key point is what makes a difference in the merit accumulated is whether one has the support of vows or not.
And
it continues. So the difference in terms of the support comes down to whether one has the support of vows or does not have the support of vows. If one does have the support of vows, what makes a further difference is if whether it is one, two, or three sets of vows. So this then we can see clearly from the illustration from sutra above, that if a practitioner...
Concludes with the cultivation of the path will be the more effective the more one has. So this is just as I said, if one has vows, one's accumulation of virtue and therefore progression on the paths will be so much faster than if one does not have vows. And if one does have vows, the sets of vows one is living in accordance with,
the number of sets or vows one is living in accordance with will make a great difference to the one's speed of spiritual development. So if one has just the vows of individual liberation, so whether ordained or non-ordained, this will make a great difference. But if one also has the vows of the Bodhisattva, then having now two sets of vows, those of individual liberation as well as those of a Bodhisattva, then those same virtuous acts will lead to the accumulation of so much more merit, and thereby enabling an even more rapid spiritual development. And so too, if one has all three sets of vows. So we see there that it's specified that there are up to three sets of vows, the vows of individual liberation of the ordained, those of the Bodhisattva, and those of secret mantra. And the more of these one is living in accordance with, the greater the virtue will come from one's virtuous endeavors because of the power of the support on one's continuum.
Dene kimbal da bo sa kimbal ma chabe ne kimbal ya da sunam sa ya le chi jung gu le so re kimbal da bi jin so jin dong so ji bi che yang ni ne da de bi dong ba de den bi ge den ne je ba da dong ba me ba je ba ni ge za tu chi chi chung xin du che ro sa ro sa.
So this previous part was the whole paragraph up to this point has really been talking about the difference between the having vows of ordination or not. So perhaps, and the illustration was of an ordained bodhisattva and a non-ordained bodhisattva. Now the next sentence, this brings in those who are not ordained. For example, there's a great difference in the strength of the roots of virtue according to whether a householder, so someone who's not ordained, at the time of, and I'm just changing this, practicing generosity and the like, acts on the basis of keeping vows, such as one-day vows, or whether he acts without any vows. The Tibetan starts with, as usual, where we are in the middle. So the translator used giving donations, which is fine, but it's the normal term for practicing generosity. And then it says, and the like. So again, this will be mentioned later, and I've mentioned it many times already. Whilst this portion of the text is mainly presented through the lens of generosity. It refers to all virtuous or non-virtuous activities. So if we say generosity, but also patience and so forth. So all virtuous endeavors or non-virtuous endeavors. So one should understand it in this way. So whether a householder, so a non-ordained person, is engaging in an act of generosity, for example, and doing so with or without vows on their continuum, such as one-day vows, the amount of merit accumulated from this act will be vastly different. So we see in the text, acts on the basis of keeping vows, such as one-day vows. So this, of course, is just an illustration, because the non-ordained or householders can have a wide variety of vows on the continuum. Clearly, what is lacking is the vows of the ordained, but there are many types of a vow specific for those who are not ordained. So there are one-day vows, there are the eight Mahayana precepts, there are the lay vows that one takes for life. So there are a variety of vows, and whatever of these one has, this will serve to boost the amount of virtue one accumulates. And likewise, if in addition to those vows, such as one-day vows or the eight Mahayana precepts or the lay vows, if one also has vows of a bodhisattva, the bodhisattva vows, or perhaps even those of secret mantra, then that too will boost how much virtue one creates from a virtuous action. So from this section, then, we can see the difference that the support on the continuum makes. The support being whether the virtuous act is supported by the presence of vows and the presence of how many vows the practitioner is living in accordance with.
So this section makes clear, the sub-outline makes clear, that there's a great difference in terms of support for one's virtuous actions if one is ordained or not ordained. And moreover, it makes clear the great difference if one is living within vows or not.
Kumakuwa
If we take as an illustration someone who was ordained and living in accordance with the vows of the ordained, but then they broke their root vow of celibacy. So then they would no longer be an ordained person, having broken that root vow of celibacy, but they still will have kept their other primary vows or root vows of the ordained. They, whilst ordained, they didn't kill, they didn't steal, and so forth. So therefore, whilst they did accumulate non-virtue from breaking that root vow, they accumulated extensive virtue through living in accordance with the other vows. So having broken a root vow and therefore no longer being ordained, that person still, if they are to still make the commitment, I will continue to act in accordance with my the other root vows. I will not kill, I will not steal, I will not lie. Then they will accumulate extensive virtue, because those vows were not broken. And now by committing to continue to live in accordance with the other root vows of not killing, not stealing, and not lying, they will accumulate extensive virtue and thereby continue to be able to have this power behind their virtuous deeds.
Baba, meva, chagor, and then that cosin, and so chug me, sayada, Michel, and Mizunshi, me, sayada, Kumoku, messi, be soon edit, to soon do by net, and you can do be seen and it soon, soon go, right, isn't that? Gavachesa, words, and I didn't dang a jiggy that Rabjun at a guinea at a chick and carson, dang at Becker and Sasson, Chazan, Mamma, so much, Yoma, that it summed the chick the carson, and ye summed the Yawasun to that, so to Gava Yawasa. Gesetzene yobache da dinade nishi zanga meba chasone da dunji dunga yorde da chasan lu yashane jigi marwa dunji dune yende nishi zanga meba chan dunji dunga dine meba le ma yorwa da ngobji sama meba chan ngobji sama yena meba le yaharwa da dunji dunga meba chan nishi zanga yena meba le yaharwa da dinaji da
The same is true for a non-ordained person. For a non-ordained person who has taken the lay vows and made the commitment not to kill, not to steal, not to engage in sexual misconduct, not to lie, not to take intoxicants, and then having a living with, in accordance with those vows, but then breaks one of them. So let's say that of sexual misconduct. So there it's important that the person not only recognizes and confesses that they've broken this vow, but also recognizes that others are not broken. They still have the vows not to kill, not to steal, not to lie, not to take intoxicants. Therefore, to recommit themselves to living in accordance with those vows, it's not necessary they must recommit to living in accordance with those vows because they have them, but because they have them whether they recommit or not. But nevertheless, to make clear to themselves, I still have the vow not to kill, and I will continue not to kill. I may have fallen short of the promise I made in terms of not engaging in sexual misconduct, for example, but I have lived up to my promise in terms of the other vows, and I will continue to do so. With such an attitude, being aware that the vows that have not been broken, being aware that those that have not been broken are unbroken, then this person will continue to live within those restraints. They will not kill, they will not steal, they will not lie, they will not take intoxicants, and therefore they will continue to accumulate great merit because, and the other meritorious acts will be powered by those vows of restraint. So this is important to know. And it's perhaps to give an illustration is, let's say you have $100 and you lose some of that money. Perhaps a bet goes wrong or you just lose it. Well, you still have something left. So look after that money. Don't waste it. Don't then throw it all away. So it's similar here that if one falls short of the promise one has made, it's not the end of the world. One needs to confess and purify those downfalls, but continue to strive to keep those vows that one has not degenerated, that have not been broken. Throughout this presentation is towards activities, both virtuous and non-virtuous. So here I've just spoken about virtuous, but it's also the case with non-virtue. If you've made the promise not to kill and then you kill, the virtue is much greater, because you have made that promise, I will not kill, and then you end up doing so. So the non-virtue is also amplified by the power of the support of vows on the continuum.
Gundu, Barche Mepper, Logi, Badu, Tigba Sabawe, Gelon, Sudum Rave, Jansongi, and Jessenji, Yone, Debi, Chimbala, Shachi, Long Jena, Migawa, Che, Mauer, Sumbala, Sumba Yang, Dinukoni, Tigba Topchaos.
That concludes that sub outline. Now we come to look at the grave consequences of faulty ethics. So Lama Tsongkhapa starts by quoting from Sutra. The Overcoming Faulty Ethical Discipline Sutra says that compared to a human being possessing the 10 non-virtues,
who for 100 years continuously and uninterruptedly accumulates bad actions, a fully ordained monk who has completely broken his vows of discipline, and who for one day, dressed in the victory banner of sages, enjoys that which has been offered in faith to him, accumulates far more bad actions. Again, because of the support, the bad actions have greater strength. The sutra starts with, compared to a human being, so this will refer to a non-ordained person possessing the 10 non-virtues. So in other words, someone engaging in the 10 non-virtues, who for 100 years continuously and uninterruptedly accumulates bad actions. So clearly this is someone who over an extensive period of time, 100 years, through their physical acts, their way of speaking, their way of thinking, is continuously engaging in non-virtue. It's very clear an immense amount of non-virtue will be accumulated.
Gelon chudim raiwe se det domba nyam de gen sur chudim raiwe ne chanson gi ye sin gi yo ne se de da chanson san yu chim den de gi che lu jin ji zhe xie guan de ba sur de ne yo ne ne de be jin ba la sa mi xian da gi de ba che xie ya fu xie be gi ka la la so ba de de ne gi ji de ne gi de ka la re ne de re an du lo la ka yong ru Then you get me, Deva Chesia, Pusia, Bay, then you get Chilia, and Shah Chi Longjava, Nimichik, then a Dengal and Nimichi Java in Nada, and the Kala and Mason, then you get Saji Savain, and Longjava, and Migawati, Chemo, Song, Digi, Kimbi, Migo, Chu, then Bigi, Mutu, Lue, Jeba, the Deepa Saba, Deepa Dele, Gelon Sutimda, and Domba Yam, then you, and the Chicken, Jasia Gwen, Jasia.
Then the comparison is made. A fully ordained monk who has completely broken his vows of discipline and who for one day dressed in the victory banner of sages, so dressed in the robes of the Buddha, enjoys that which has been offered in faith to him, accumulates far more bad actions, so accumulates far more non-virtue. And the reason is clear. It's because of the strength by way of the support. Now, Lama Tsongkhapa quotes from the Vinaya. It is better, and I've just changed some of the translation in the third line, and which will continue that change in the first sentence below the verse. It is better that they eat lumps of iron blazing with tongues of fire than for those with faulty ethics or not completely restrained to eat the alms foods of the local people. This has been taught with regard to both faulty ethics and slackness in training.
The meaning is quite clear here. It's a comparison again is being made that if one compares the suffering of eating blazing lumps of iron, so we can think of an ironmonger who's beating a piece of metal, and to do so will have heated it so that it's blazing red. We can imagine what, if one eats that, the immense pain that one would experience, even if it was something small, so that one could swallow it, the immense pain that one would experience. That is less suffering than would be experienced by those who, than for those with faulty ethics or who are not completely restrained to eat the alms food of the local people. So this is as similar to what's been expressed above. That when someone who has broken a root vow is no longer ordained, but still acts before others as if they are, in other words, they are showing the signs, are dressed as an ordained person, and then receives offerings given with faith, they will accumulate so much more non-virtue. That non-virtue will lead to rebirth in the hell realms, where the intensity of the suffering and the duration of the suffering will be far worse than merely the suffering experienced in this one life of eating blazing
iron.
So therefore, the next sentence, this has been taught with regard to both faulty ethics and slackness in training.
Then Lama Tsongkhapa continues, and I've just change two words. Drontompa's statement that the non-virtue of engaging in the 10 non-virtues is very small when compared to the non-virtue of having broken one's reliance on the Dharma appears to be true.
Reading it again, Drontompa's statement that the non-virtue of engaging in the 10 non-virtues is very small when compared to the non-virtue of having broken one's reliance on the Dharma appears to be true. So usually what would be meant by a reliance on the Dharma would be referred to engaging in non-virtue against the objects of refuge, against the three jewels, or about propounding wrong views, views which are contrary to the Dharma. So that would usually be what is meant by breaking one's reliance on the Dharma. But that isn't the meaning here. The meaning is, as states, is not living in accordance with the vows one has taken. So not living the non-virtue, and what would in other contexts be a minor non-virtuous act, but because that minor non-virtuous act leads to the breaking of a vow, it is then a greatly non-virtuous act. And that greatly non-virtuous act is even worse than breaking the 10 non-virtues for 100 years continuously. In other words, engaging in non-virtue with one's body, speech, and mind continuously for 100 years. That is less non-virtuous, or not as non-virtuous, as breaking one's vows. And again, this reference is that what would be otherwise a minor non-virtue, but because that minor non-virtue is contrary to the vows once taken, that non-virtue is immense.
아니 안 쳐내든지 디바사야 아니 견뎌내든지 디바사야 지금 디네기 쳐내든지 디바사야디 거의 신뢰든지 디바라야 거야지어로 와다 이제 거야요 다디디 다디디 쳐내든지 디바사야디 쳐내든 바서 돈바송디 행기 강사디 디기 디바사바 딜레에서 디바사바 딜레 돈바미송의 김베 김비기 미의 주봉기 디바제바디 디바디 충충레에서 지송거라
So again, just to clarify this reliance on the Dharma. So this would in, normally we could refer to such things as what we looked at last night, which is the great strength by way of the field. And there we saw one of the great strength by way of the field refers to the three jewels. So if one were to engage in non-virtue in relation to the three jewels, the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha, then that would be greatly non-virtuous. So that's what we looked at last night. And this would not be a common understanding of reliance on the Dharma. But here it refers to the vows on one's continuum. So in this context, this expression, reliance on the Dharma, refers to the vows on one's continuum. So in brief, the meaning of great strength by way of the support, again, where support refers to the on the continuum, one's virtuous or non-virtuous actions have the support of vows abiding on the continuum. The virtue or non-virtue engaged in is greatly enhanced by the presence of vows on the continuum. And this is to be understood. Illustrations are those of generosity, but it should be understood for any virtuous or non-virtuous activity. It is greatly enhanced by the presence of vows. And the illustration given from this Heap of Jewels Sutra was where where offerings are made, and the difference primarily comes down to the difference in terms of whether vows are present or not. The motivation could be the same, the recipients could be the same, but if the vows are present, so much more merit will be accumulated, even if there is great difference in terms of what is offered. So again, the motivation is the same, the recipient is the same, but what is offered is much less. But even if something much smaller is being offered by someone holding vows, so much more merit is created. But this is also the case for non-virtue, for not acting in accordance with one's vows. And here, if someone with vows not to steal, as opposed to someone without vows not to steal, steals the same thing with a similar motivation, and they're stealing the same object, the person with vows not to steal will accumulate so much more non-virtue. So therefore, from these illustrations, we understand that both one's virtue or non-virtue is greatly enhanced by the presence of vows. The impact this presentation should have on us is that we should come to identify as a holder of the vows of the Buddha. So whatever vows one has, one should identify as, I am a holder of the vows of the Buddha. Therefore, I will live within the restraints of those vows. Because these vows are what will keep, by living in accordance with these vows, I'll live in accordance with the restraints of what is ethical. And I will not go beyond the restraints of what is ethical. In other words, I will not be unethical in my way of acting and speaking, and ideally in my way of thinking. So this is the outcome to come to identify yourself as being a holder of the vows of the Buddha, and therefore I will live as well as I can within the restraints of these vows. And in this way, I will fulfill the promises that I have made. So it's about the vows one has, keeping them well, living well within those restraints. And one can also give rise, having heard of the great benefits of living within the vows, give rise to the aspiration to live within vows if one is not yet so. And furthermore, it was said earlier that those who have the vows of the ordained, but then break one of the root vows, such as, for example, that of celibacy, in such an instance, do not give up on ethics, but rather both recognize the fault of having broken one of the root vows that one promised to uphold, but also recognize I still have those other vows, and recognizing this, remind yourself of the great benefits of living in accordance with the vows that one has taken. In other words, living within accordance with the ethical restraints that one has promised to uphold. That vow still, or those vows still exist on your continuum. So recommit yourself. I will not kill. I will not steal. I will not engage in lying. And thereby, one will still continue to accumulate extensive virtue. So this process involves an honest recognition, or looking at oneself honestly, and this will have a negative aspect, but don't dwell on that negative aspect, but come to see yourself in a balanced way, and thereby commit to living in accordance with the vows that one still has. And the same is true for the vows of the non-ordained, if those are broken. But also, what I encourage you also to do is to recognize the vows that you have taken and rejoice in this. Rejoice in that excellent decision that led you to take these vows. And then, through this rejoicing, commit again and again to living in accordance with them. Because this committing to live in accordance with the vows helps to keep them fresh, alive within oneself, and thereby becomes ever easier to ethically live within those confines. And for those who have not yet taken vows, that is not an impediment to living ethically. So there one can still develop the determined attitude, I will live ethically. I will restrain my physical behavior, my speech, and as best I can, my mind too. Restrain it within the confines of what's ethical. So it's not necessary to receive vows in order to live ethically. Going through the ceremony to receive vows, making that promise in the ceremony, this is incredibly helpful to living thereafter within the vows, but it's not indispensable. So even for those who have not taken vows, make the firm commitment, I will not cause harm, certainly not through my physical behavior and not through my speech, and my mind, I will try to restrain it too. And every time you think like this, as you are right now, and in times going forward from now, every time you think like this, you generate merit. Every time you recognize the great benefit of the vows you have taken, and you strengthen your commitment to live in accordance with them, as well as perhaps give aspiration to take further vows, great merit is accumulated. Especially, or to enhance this, do so within the context of the results of ethics, reminding yourself, because of these promises I've made to live within the confines of what is ethical, I am creating the causes that will lead to further excellent rebirth. And moreover, because I've taken these vows and I try to live my life with the goal of accumulating causes that will lead to Buddhahood, by living within the context of these vows, I'm continuously accumulating causes that will lead to my enlightenment for the sake of others, my complete liberation from suffering, so that I can guide others to achieve such a state. So by reminding oneself of the vows one has taken and the great benefits thereof, one accumulates extensive virtue and strengthens the restraints of ethics that one lives in accordance with. Now to the third of the four, great strength by way of the thing, so the thing or the object. In the case of giving gifts to sentient beings, giving the Dharma is supreme. And in the case of making offerings to the Buddhas, offering one's practice is supreme. Each being far superior to gifts and offerings of material things. Using this as an example, apply it, and understand it to apply in other cases. Look in the first line. In the case of giving gifts to sentient beings, giving the Dharma is supreme. So giving the Dharma is the supreme gift to give to others. Giving material objects, whatever they may be, none equal the value of giving the Dharma. Giving the Dharma would refer to guiding others how to live ethically, understanding what are the causes of happiness and what are the causes of suffering, and guiding others in how to adopt or cultivate the minds that are ethical and therefore the causes of happiness, and how to abandon the minds which are non-virtuous, the afflictions, and therefore the causes of suffering. Guiding beings like that is so much more beneficial than giving anything material. Likewise, in teaching others that liberation from suffering in its entirety is possible, and this is how you can get there. So guiding them how to gain freedom from suffering is of far greater value than material generosity. Likewise, independence on that training them how to generate bodhicitta, to recognize that others are suffering too, that they are in pain for the same reasons that you are, and they, like you, yearn to be freed from suffering. So teaching them about bodhicitta is of far greater benefit than giving anything materially. And so too in the practices that beings need to engage in order to achieve excellent rebirths or liberation or Buddhahood, training such as generosity, as ethics, as patience, enthusiastic perseverance, concentration, wisdom, teaching others how to train their minds, cultivate these within their minds. This too is of far greater benefit than material generosity.
And tsurim sunya ki sung ure siya tang, dine ki jimbe tang ya nyamne che war spa la ba yina, kwa di nyamne che ba yina, di su su koron liya gheva sa, gheva di ki yana, tse te tang, gheva chi ma la yina, di ki yana ki gyu chi, gyu tu gu yo ba za, an di ki chen, di chen da kwa, mwa ba di ki kwa la panto che che karo ba, tse te la da, che chi ma di ki tu ya ki, bin tsurim sung ure sebe sun na, kwa la bi chi tsurim sung da, lunga si nye chi tsurim sung da shi, kwa la pa la bi ne kwa nyamne che chi ba yina, And said, Delay in a coronalia, Gawa, Zad, and Dikiyadi, and Gawa Chima in a Mondioko want to be Gushada, Tarbada, Tarbi, Tamjikimoko want to eke, Sabon Din Masona, Odich, Saguyo by Zan, Daddy, Gawa Chesh, Bautomeo Gawa Shinto, the Chavachago Rada.
So this is important to understand well, to understand clearly, because it's It was presented here is not to deprecate the material generosity or the giving of gifts. It's not to deprecate that and say, don't bother. It's insignificant compared to giving the Dharma. Whilst it is insignificant when compared to giving the Dharma, sentient beings also need to be aided, to be helped from their current predicament. So in particular, when you think of beings, in pain right now. If one can alleviate that pain right now, do so. And if that means giving some guidance, giving some friendship, aiding them materially, do so. So do not abandon the one only with the aspiration to give the other. This would be a misunderstanding. So where you can help alleviate the sufferings of beings now, do so in any way in accordance with your capacity. But when doing so, do so with a motivation of understanding that you are helping the being with alleviate their present suffering, but that it is possible to gain complete liberation of suffering. So do so, therefore, with the aspiration, whilst I'm helping this being now overcome their immediate suffering, may I become, through this merit, sufficiently skilled to help beings gain complete freedom from suffering entirely. And through this connection I'm creating with this being that I'm helping now, may I be able to lead them later to complete freedom from suffering. So whilst one is engaging in merely offering of material support, one is doing so with a far greater motivation. This then is a really skillful way to help beings. And likewise, in terms of offering to the Buddhas, offering something material, whilst excellent to do, is insignificant when compared to offering one's practice. In other words, accomplishing the Dharma in accordance with what the Buddha has taught, accomplishing the Dharma in one's mind in accordance with what the Buddha has taught. Wait, our time for this morning is up, so we'll conclude there and continue this afternoon. Thank you.